It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We continue our series of interviews with the candidates running for Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District, which covers the southeastern part of the state. That seat is currently held by House Speaker Paul Ryan, who is retiring. This morning, we talk with Ken Yorgan, a chiropractor from Racine who is the independent candidate in the race. He faces Republican Brian Stiles and Democrat Randy Bryce. Ken, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the morning show.
Good morning. You sound good. Is it pleasant to be out of retirement here for a while?
It's pleasant to be back on the radio. Getting up at 4 a.m. is the price I have to pay. So, you know, as a good friend of mine always used to tell me, you're going to be dead for millions and billions and trillions of years. Why not stay up late tonight? So first, I
like the attitude.
Yeah, you know, first of all, Ken, and before this interview goes completely off the rails, why are you running for Congress, and more specifically, why are you running as an independent?
Well, I'm running because I think that there is a dysfunctional duopoly that has been running our government. We've got Republicans and Democrats exchanging the majority position, and very little gets accomplished. They're constantly arguing. The majority tends to ram their position through without the minority having much of a voice and the public having basically no voice, because the parties are run by some very, very wealthy and influential people. I mean, if you look at the race thus far, did anybody really doubt who the candidates were going to be from the Republican and Democratic side? I mean, not anybody who was at all observant of politics. So I'm running as an independent because when polled, 40 to 49% of Americans will typically identify themselves as independent, and most often they do not have an independent candidate to vote for. So I'm the voice out there for people who are independent-minded. I think if I get to Congress, I would be one of those people who would be able to reach across the aisle, because in fact I would be the aisle. So we're just offering people a choice, which I don't think the choice is really there when you go with Republican or Democrat, because there's this stalemate going on and very little gets accomplished.
You're pretty clear on your campaign website that you won't accept corporate money for this campaign. Meanwhile, your opponents have raised and spent millions of dollars already. How do you compete with that?
Well, by doing this kind of thing, telephone interviews. One of the primary tools of our campaign has been a campaign tabloid, which we've put together. It's a 16-page document. It's approximately the size and shape of a shopper, only rather than advertising, it's got political points of view in it. And we've been distributing that throughout the Southeast District. And we're getting a very, very good response to it. It's available online. You know, we have a website, yorganforcongress.com, and a Facebook presence. And we're doing about as we expected to do, and this is the point in time where we expect that there's going to be increased interest. So we're pretty much on track, even though the poll numbers don't look great. I mean, oftentimes when polls are conducted, they don't ask who specifically are you going to vote for and give names. They'll say, do you plan to vote for Democratic or Republican or other or whatever. So, I mean, an independent's name has a difficult time getting recognized, but we're working on that, and people are responding to the message. We're very encouraged, actually.
Speaking of money, let's talk about Foxconn. The company's receiving billions of dollars in state tax incentives to locate in southeastern Wisconsin. As a result, there are some mixed feelings about the company's presence in the 1st Congressional District. So, as the district's representative, what could you do to ensure that the state receives a good return on its investment?
I don't think, quite honestly, that there's much that a congressional representative could do as far as Foxconn is concerned, because there is very, very mixed feelings about Foxconn within the state, probably across the nation. I have mixed feelings myself. I think that that project was planned a long time ago. I don't think it was anywhere near as spontaneous as it was presented to the public. There's been other situations where Foxconn has come in and announced big projects and they have not come to fruition. And I'm very, very skeptical. I hope that it works. I hope that it turns out great, but I've got serious reservations about it. So I'm not going to work against it, but I'm going to be approaching it very, very cautiously and preparing for the worst while supporting the best, so to speak.
Let's talk about the federal deficit. It's big. It's getting bigger. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell recently said the only way to lower that deficit would be to cut social safety net programs like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Is that something you'd be willing to accept?
No, not at all. I think those programs, Social Security and Medicare, for example, are promises that were made to the American people. We've been paying into that system for all of our working lives. And to have that rug pulled under out from under us now would be that would be criminal, I think. There are other places where money can be reduced in terms of spending. I think the military budget is bloated. I don't know why we have 800 bases and have 172 countries. I mean, why? When and why were we appointed policemen to the world? There are some countries that could get along just fine without us. So I think we need to take a long, hard look at that. Most of warfare in the future is not going to be fought with tanks and guns and rockets. I think we already realize that cyberspace is a new frontier of war, and there should be more concentration in protecting our country in that direction.
Well, let's also talk about health care, because that seems to be a really important issue for a lot of people across the country and in Wisconsin. During the last session, we saw a failed attempt at repealing the Affordable Care Act, followed by changes that were made to the law. In your view, what needs to happen with the Affordable Care Act and more generally with health care?
Well, health care financing is the real issue. We have great healthcare technologies in the United States, but we have some of the poorest results in the world, quite honestly. Among the industrialized nations, we typically come in last in terms of results and outcomes, and we spend the most money for it. I think we need to completely abandon the old paradigm of insurance completely. It worked for a while, but it's a failed system. It's archaic. It's extremely expensive. Insurance actually was created back in the 1920s by physicians and providers in the Boston area who felt that it would make their services more accessible to people who couldn't pay in a timely fashion. It also stabilized their income stream. Now, because of that medical history, providers like myself, acupuncturists, naturopaths, other good healthcare services have been traditionally excluded from insurance. Which is, that's not my main beef. My main beef is that a lot of people can't afford to access health care at all. So we need to get rid of that system. I'm proposing that we restructure our health care financing, and most probably the way to do it would be through a sales tax on non-essential purchases. I've done the math, and roughly a 15% sales tax, which freaks people out when they hear that number, would be sufficient to fund our system. It would also take Medicare out of the Social Security program. Medicare right now is taking money out of the Social Security Trust, and that's one of the reasons why everybody's talking about Social Security being imperiled and running out of money. Now, if you take this 15% sales tax, like I said, people are kind of freaked out by it, but you would have to spend $1,000 in a month's time in order to generate $150 in taxes. Now, a lot of people aren't even going to spend $1,000 in non-essential purchases. They simply don't have the money to do that. So you're eliminating any kind of health insurance premium, but you're paying a tax, so you're still participating in the program. And we could afford to make care available for everybody, pre-existing conditions included. You know, I think that's the way to go. I'm certainly open to have a conversation about that, but I think we need to reform health care financing, and I want to be at the table at that conversation.
Bringing it back to Wisconsin, what do you think is the biggest issue in your district, and how would you work to tackle it in Congress?
The biggest issue? Wow. Well, certainly the farm issue is of importance. I mean, we've got farmers who are now suffering due to the tariffs that have been imposed on other countries, specifically China, which has caused them to do soybean purchases elsewhere. That's damaged our farmers. There is some of the money that's being collected in the tariff that's given to the farmers as a subsidy. But if you talk to farmers, they don't want to be subsidized. They want to produce, and they want to be paid a fair price for the products that they produce. I mean, they like their lifestyle. They like what they're doing. They don't like the disruptions in the market. Also, the loss of manufacturing that we've had in southeast Wisconsin has been very, very damaging. I don't know how to bring back in more manufacturing. I think we're probably going to have to shift to a different kind of economy. Returning somewhat to agriculture would be good. This Foxconn project, if it goes, is only going to employ 13,000 people maximum. So I don't think industry is the way to go. I think we need to scale back a little bit, live a little bit simpler lifestyles, and, that'll be helpful.
Now, we've got about 30 seconds. Give us a final brief pitch to voters as to why they should vote for you on November 6th.
Well, I'm the independent voice, and I'm representative of the independent voice out in the public. 40 to 49% of the public is self-identified as independent. And I think when people ask me who am I going to steal votes from, I say I'm here to prevent them from stealing votes from us. So go to the website, look at what I have to say in the independent voice, and make up your mind. But the message that I have has been resonating with a lot of people, and I think people can go and look.
Thanks for being with us this morning. Ken Yorgan is a chiropractor from Racine, independent candidate running in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. This year, Wisconsin Public Radio is going beyond the ballot, asking people around the state what issues are important to them during this election season. The state of our roads is one of the issues that gets people talking. We've got two stories today that take a look at what people are saying about the state's deteriorating bridges and highways and where the candidates for governor stand on this issue. First, here's Bridget Bowden.
In every corner of Wisconsin, we've heard people say the same thing about the roads. They need work. In Kenosha, there's Rachel Anderson.
The roads in my area are horrible, horrible, horrible. I know it's been brought up, but something needs to change. It's causing taxpayers tons of money every year to deal with these crappy, crappy roads. I'm sick of it.
In Toma, there's Shannon Gebauer.
Roads, bridges, everything seems to be kind of deteriorating. We see a lot of patchwork going on.
Kathleen Redmond in Milwaukee.
I know there's a lot of funding going on, but I don't know why we don't have usable streets.
And Craig Coleman in Green Bay.
The roads around here are horrible, and they need to do something about that.
According to an audit of the State Department of Transportation, 32.8% of Wisconsin state highways were in fair, poor, or worse condition in 2015. It's something Robert Swenson from northwestern Wisconsin has seen firsthand.
Well, I was in Ladysmith the other day, and I think they should probably just close them roads and let people walk because you ruin your car driving on them. But there's not potholes, they're just a constant source of ridges and dips and bounces.
Not every voter has an opinion about why roads are in bad shape, but Swenson has a theory. In 2006, a bipartisan coalition repealed a long-standing law that indexed the gas tax or tied it to inflation. Swenson thinks that was a mistake.
And everybody thought it was wonderful because they were saving probably $5, $10 a year, and now our infrastructure is falling apart.
Mark Gottlieb, the former secretary of the State Department of Transportation, is a civil engineer by trade. He says roads deteriorate for a few reasons.
Water is kind of the enemy of a pavement. So you see that weather-related those cycles of freeze and thaw, deterioration, and then you also see deterioration from repeated traffic loading, and that's mostly trucks generally.
But harsh weather and heavy trucks aside, Gottlieb says it's primarily a funding issue in Wisconsin.
We just don't have enough money to maintain what is fundamentally a depreciating asset. I mean, a road and a bridge, they have a specific life span to them, and if you aren't making the investments you need to make at the right times during that lifespan to keep them up, then what you're going to find is a natural deterioration of their condition.
A lot of possible solutions have been tossed around by politicians. Everything from raising the gas tax to borrowing more money to implementing toll roads. It's a big question, and Robert Swenson doesn't see a clear solution.
Where are we going to get the money from? Raise the taxes? Well, you can't do that because people don't want to pay more money. They want the cream, but they don't want to raise the cow, so to speak.
All of this is playing out in the 2018 campaign between Republican Governor Scott Walker and Democratic challenger Tony Evers. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Bridget Bowden.
And I'm Sean Johnson. In Wisconsin's governor's race, there's not much overlap between Evers and Walker when it comes to transportation. It's been Evers who's talking about how bad the roads have gotten, pinning the blame on Walker.
Scott Walker has drawn a line in the sand around transportation, and as a result, our roads are crumbling. We have people in northern Wisconsin that are scraping the asphalt off the road and they're driving on gravel roads.
And it's been Walker who's been warning that if Evers becomes governor, he'll raise gas taxes.
Ladies and gentlemen, you need to be ready for a massive gas tax increase.
Todd Berry is a longtime budget analyst who ran the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance for 25 years. He says Evers and Walker are as different as any candidates he remembers when it comes to what they're saying about road funding.
I can't remember it being this black and white.
Evers has attacked Walker on the state of Wisconsin's roads more than either of his previous Democratic opponents. He's had help from Wisconsin's Operating Engineers, a road building union that endorsed Walker in his first run for governor. They're backing an ad campaign against Walker that encourages people to send in pictures of damaged roads. The group calls them Scott Holes.
Fix our roads, Governor. To learn more, go to scottholes.com. Paid for by Safe Transportation Over Politics.
Evers says everything's on the table when it comes to paying for roads, from tolls to an increase in the gas tax. He says if he's elected governor, both parties will work together toward a solution.
Republicans and Democrats get this idea. The only person in the way of solving this infrastructure problem in the state of Wisconsin is Governor Walker.
There's polling that suggests Evers has the public support here. The latest Marquette University Law School poll showed 64% of Wisconsin residents think their roads are in fair or poor condition. But when it comes to what to do about those roads, pollster Charles Franklin says it's a different story. He says Marquette has been asking these questions for years.
And in every one of those cases, we find a demand for better highways and at exactly the same time, a reluctance to pay for it.
In the latest Marquette poll, 61% said they don't want to pay higher taxes or fees for roads. Those are the voters Walker's going after. During the last budget cycle, he sparred with his fellow Republicans in the legislature who wanted to raise taxes or fees to pay for roads.
I will veto any changes made to the budget that add to the overall burden of the taxpayers of this state.
This year, he's been attacking Evers for his willingness to raise the gas tax. Walker even cut a 15-second ad that plays on video screens at gas pumps.
Hi, it's Scott Walker. Good thing you're filling up, because if Tony Evers wins, he'll raise the gas tax by as much as a dollar a gallon.
That's been amplified by TV ads from his campaign.
He's going to raise the gas tax by up to a dollar a gallon.
And conservative groups like Americans for Prosperity.
Evers is open to gas tax hikes, even a dollar more per gallon.
Evers has never said he'd support a $1 per gallon increase in the gas tax. Asked what he had to say about Walker's claim at the last debate, Evers responded,
"Holy mackerel is what I say. Of course, the people of Wisconsin understand, except for Scott Walker, keep repeating it, a dollar a gallon is ridiculous. It's never going to happen."
Wisconsin's current state gas tax is 31 cents per gallon. It's remained the same for more than 12 years. The trade-off is that data shows Wisconsin roads are getting worse, and the public has noticed. For Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Sean Johnson.
Thank you, Sean, and thank you, Bridget. To hear more about the issues like transportation affecting Wisconsinite, visit WPR.org/ballot. We're going to continue the conversation about the challenges transportation can cause when roads aren't up to snuff. Our next guest will walk us through the costs and consider solutions that elected officials are considering. And we want to hear from you. Are the roads the single most important issue to you this election? Why? How do you feel your elected officials have represented you when it comes to what your community needs? from its roads, from the transportation system. 800-642-1234, ideas at WPR.org, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. I'm John Munson. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. Wisconsin voters are talking about the state of our roads and bridges. Most agree that we have some serious problems. But the big issue seems to be, well, how do we pay the bill? What do you think are the best ways to pay for repairing our roads? Gas tax? Continue to borrow? What are roads like in your part of Wisconsin? Are certain streets in great shape while others break down? What's happened in your area that makes keeping up with repairs difficult? And what do you think about Wisconsin's bridges? 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the discussion. 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Rocky Moretti is the Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. Rocky, welcome back to the morning show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So according to an audit of the State Department of Transportation in 2017, about a third of Wisconsin state highways were in fair, poor, or worse condition. And a report that TRIP released a month ago showed that half of major locally and state-maintained roads and highways in the state rate as poor or mediocre. That's not a very good report card. What are the major challenges facing Wisconsin when it comes to repairing roads and other infrastructure?
Well, obviously, you've got a growing economy. We're seeing that travel's increasing over 2.5% annually in Wisconsin. That's a good sign. It shows economic growth, but that's more wear and tear on the system. You've got at least a third of major roads in poor condition, and in major urban areas, closer to half. And as roads get into that condition, the cost of making improvements becomes even more costly. And so as you fall behind, you're actually spending more money. And so the challenge is to make those repairs, and roads, even in cold weather states, can be kept in good condition, but you have to have the resources to make those investments.
And one of the things we've noticed in recent years is that as cars have become more fuel efficient, we've seen more hybrids on the road, and now we're getting more totally electric vehicles on the road. The amount of gas that people purchase hasn't necessarily gone up as much as it might have otherwise, and so we're collecting less in fuel taxes at the pump. And doesn't that make it even harder to meet those financial obligations to keep the roads and bridges in repair?
Unless a fuel tax is indexed in some way to inflation, from the moment it's set, it's a diminishing resource. And what we've seen as a trend since 2013, 27 states have moved forward with significant funding packages in 23 states with some type of increased on either the gasoline or diesel in recognition of that fact. And in 10 of the states, they also included indexing as part of that. But it's a recognition that those resources or those funding sources by their nature are diminishing. And so from time to time, you have to make adjustments to it just to keep the buying power the same.
One point you raised when we last talked was concern about bridges. Your report showed that nearly 1 in 10 of Wisconsin's locally and state-maintained bridges are structurally deficient. What does structurally deficient mean?
a structurally deficient bridge means all bridges have to be inspected every 2 years. It means that the engineers, when they inspect it, have seen significant deterioration either of the deck or the substructure, the superstructure, essentially the critical components of a bridge. It doesn't mean the bridge is in any danger of collapsing or they would close it, or in many cases they restrict it to lighter weight vehicles, but it's a recognition that the time's due now for significant repairs. And as Wisconsin's bridges get older, those repairs become even more costly.
Which parts of the state are facing the most trouble, so to speak, when it comes to deficient bridges?
If you look at the report itself, we did break it down by urban area, and Madison and Wausau both with close to 10% were the higher numbers. We also see that when you look at bridges at the rural level, we see a significant number of rural bridges. Now, typically, they are with lower volumes of traffic, but they also typically have very high shares of deficiencies. And the challenge is they're maintained by state and local governments. And you can keep bridges open as long as possible, and that's a cost-efficient approach. But typically any bridge built before the 1980s really doesn't have the type of materials and building structures that allow them to be kept open indefinitely. The point comes when you have to replace or reconstruct a bridge, and obviously that takes significant resources.
In our Beyond the Ballot feature that we played earlier in the show, we heard how worried and upset Wisconsinites are about the state of the state's roads. Take us beyond feelings for us, Rusty. What's the cost of deficient roads and infrastructure for us personally?
We estimated in the last report that the total cost statewide of deficient roads was $6.8 billion. If you break that down, for example, in the Madison area, the average driver, it's $2,139 per driver. But if you look at it a little bit closer, the three components are additional vehicle operating costs, which is almost half of that cost. And that is quite simply the worse shape the roads are in, the more stress your vehicle's operating under, and it's depreciating that much more quickly. You can't hold on to that vehicle as long as you would like, and that's a huge cost. There's also more repairs, more fuel consumption, but the lifespan of your vehicle is probably the most critical one. With over, on average, 560 people being killed annually in vehicle crashes in the state, there's a significant economic cost to that. And we estimate in about a third of those crashes, if you had ideal roadway safety features in place that are very cost-effective, you could likely reduce the likelihood of a serious crash. And then the final component, about a third of the cost, is the cost of traffic congestion. And traffic congestion obviously impacts the individual, but it also slows down the productivity of businesses. And as Wisconsin competes with other regions for bringing businesses into the state, having good infrastructure, good reliable highways is very critical.
What about federal funding? How does that play into this equation?
Well, certainly at the beginning of the Trump administration, there was significant discussion of a significant boost in infrastructure, although really the proposals from the administration were largely to leverage state and local governments from increasing their investment in transportation. We really haven't seen the ability for Congress to move on that program. And then the current federal program will expire in late 2020. So we would anticipate that next year's Congress is going to be getting to grapple very seriously with transportation investment. But at the same time, we just haven't seen the ability or interest by Congress over the last two decades to significantly boost federal investment. So it really seems that really the responsibility for improving roads and bridges falls on the state and also the local governments.
And, of course, the longer we wait, the more things cost. How do increasing cost of supplies play into this conversation about repairs?
In the last year, highway construction materials, things like diesel fuel, asphalt, aggregates, have increased in cost by 7.5%. That's triple the rate of inflation. And so certainly materials costs are going up. We've also seen the labor market tightening, and although tariffs on foreign steel doesn't impact directly a highway construction, which typically, if it involves federal dollars, is restricted to using U.S. steel, the reality is that U.S. steel prices are impacted when other sources of steel go up in terms of pricing.
So we've got about a minute left. What happens if we do nothing? What happens if we just decide to ignore this problem and we don't fix our infrastructure?
If the state continues to kick the can down the road, what you see are conditions worsening, more bridges becoming deficient. You see traffic congestion getting worse, which impacts businesses. You don't see the roadway safety improvements being made that are going to keep you and your loved ones safer. And those costs only escalate in the future. You know, if you stop maintaining your home, it might save you a few dollars in the short run, but I don't think anyone thinks that's a wise decision in the long term.
All right, Rocky Moretti, thanks. Thanks again for joining us this morning. Always appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Rocky Moretti is the Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. He joins us when we talk about transportation issues on The Morning Show. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. In this installment of our series of interviews with Wisconsin candidates for Congress, we speak with Glenn Grothman, the incumbent Republican U.S. Representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. Prior to his time in Congress, Representative Grothman served in the Wisconsin Legislature from 1993 to 2015. He is running to serve a third term in the House of Representatives. Congressman Grothman, welcome to The Morning Show.
Glad to be on the show. Always good to be on the Ideas Network.
Me too. Why are you running for re-election?
Well, we feel we've accomplished a lot in my first 3 years here. We returned our local control back to the school district. We removed some burdensome regulations from the financial community. We've rebuilt the defense and had a nice tax cut. But there's more to be done. Our welfare system is messed up. Right now we're discouraging people from working. The formulas discourage marriage. I think that's something we've got to take up. Our immigration laws have not really been wholesale reform since the 1980s. That's something that should be taken up. And the damage from Obamacare, the increased costs in particular, has still not been repaired. So for these reasons, I'd like to come back for a third term.
Well, let's talk about health care. You're in favor of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. You voted to repeal it in the past, and you voted in favor of the GOP's American Health Care Act. What policies do you hope to enact to change the way that health care works?
Well, the first thing we have to do is we have to make sure that we retain the requirement that pre-existing conditions have to be covered. It's a little bit frustrating running for election here when your opponent, who's got quite a bit more money than me, quite frankly, way more money, particularly your listeners in the Green Bay area will know that, is saying that I don't want to cover pre-existing conditions. When something is ultimately passed, we want to make sure that we continue to cover pre-existing conditions because there are a lot of people out there who may have cancer, heart disease, whatever, and we have to make sure they get insurance. Otherwise, I think we want to go towards more association health plans. The big problem we have right now in the current system is larger companies are able to, through self-insurance, through employer-based clinics, have been able to hold the line on cost. But people who are not in a larger plan, their costs have been spiraling out of control. So if we can do things like have a Farm Bureau across the state set up association plans, that sort of thing, I think it'll be a big step in the right direction. I think we also have to allow reimportation of drugs. I think that'll do something towards holding down the out-of-control costs of prescription drugs, which is one of the things driving up the cost of health insurance.
And when it comes to covering people with pre-existing conditions, how specifically would you do that? One of the things that's been proposed are high-risk pools. Is that what you're thinking of, or do you have something else in mind?
No, we left the same language in that was in there in Obamacare in both the bills I voted for.
So, other than health care, what's the most important issue in your district right now?
Well, the economy is doing very well. You know, I've always been a big advocate for manufacturing. We changed the tax structure when I was in the state legislature to be very favorable. I think the big problem is we have to find more people to work. And part of that is making sure our education system is more skills-based. We have too many people who spend time going to school in which they had a degree that didn't lead to a job, particularly if they have big student loans. It's just criminal what's happening to these people. Frequently they go back when they're 25, 27 years old to learn a skill. It'd be good if that was done in the first place. And wherever I go, people are looking for more workers. As I mentioned, our welfare system, I think the big problem is a human problem there in the welfare system, in that you are discouraging people from working. And, you know, they don't get, I don't think you can feel good of yourself when you're on the welfare system. But as we get people off the welfare, that will also in part solve the problem of a lack of people working.
Immigration was a big issue this year with President Trump's push for a wall, the White House's controversial family separation policy, and then last week President Trump's warning that he would close down the southwestern border of the United States if Mexico doesn't stop an incoming caravan of migrants. Do you agree with how the White House has handled immigration over the past year?
Well, you know, we changed the policy, and I was one of the people who wanted to change the policy on separating children from their families. And, of course, Donald Trump was just carrying over the Obama policy. For whatever reason, nobody ever talked about it when it was the Obama policy. But we got the Trump administration to change their policy, which I think was a good thing. But we have to stop this idea of having everybody come across the border. Our goal should be that every immigrant comes here legally. I mean, you're obviously having a problem right out of the chute if people come here illegally. We swear in over 600,000 new citizens a year in this country. That's nothing to be embarrassed about. And there are 196 countries in the world, or 197 now. Not everybody has to come here. So I think we just want to make sure that all the 600,000 to 700,000 people we swear in every year are top-of-the-line immigrants who are ready to work, who are not going to commit crimes. And I think when we do have people who are here illegally, we're not going to deport them all. Anybody who is on any welfare program, anybody who's committed a crime, they have to be removed.
In the past, you've said that the United States cannot be the welfare magnet for the Western Hemisphere when it comes to immigration.
Absolutely.
What do you mean by that?
Right. Well, I think if you wind up living what I'll call a welfare lifestyle in the United States, you may be materially better off than the middle class in other countries. And we want to make sure when people come here, they come here saying, I'm going to work all the time. I'm not going to break the law. And right now, even though in many cases against the law, if you talk to the income maintenance workers, there are people here getting food share, that sort of thing, who are here illegally. And first of all, it's costing us money. We're broke. Secondly, you're having people who are providing, in many cases, a bad role model for their children. And finally, you're not having people who are filling the jobs that we need. So, you know, you've got to remember, our standard of living is so much higher than, say, in Honduras or El Salvador or Haiti or some of these countries that you might be better off, you probably are better off not working in the United States than working in Haiti or El Salvador and Honduras.
Let's talk a little bit about the deficit, because that seems to be a big issue. Senator Mitch McConnell recently said that in order to cover America's growing budget deficit at the federal level, that cuts would need to be made in social safety net programs like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Would you support those kind of cuts?
No, I'm with Donald Trump. I don't think we have to end with Medicare and Social Security. I think that Mitch McConnell did a bad job of negotiating the last omnibus bill. I voted against it, even though it was negotiated in part by Republican leadership. It contained an increase in discretionary spending of over 10%, and that was just outlandish. And for have some of these politicians, including Mitch McConnell, sign off on a bill that contained a 10% increase in in discretionary spending, and then imply that we had to look at things like Medicare is ridiculous. As I mentioned, I do think our welfare-related programs are sometimes too generous. I think there is a savings there.
Do you think there's enough of a savings there that would cover the kinds of deficits that we're actually looking at?
You'll get a significant savings, and you got to remember, the economy, if it continues to grow at 4 or 5%, is going to be an improvement as well.
So you're one of the projections that was made before the tax cut plan was passed, that it would pay for itself. So far, it hasn't. Are you saying you think it will in the future?
Well, I think the first 10 months into the first year or the last fiscal year showed income tax receipts up compared to the 10 months prior to that. And, you know, I know that Trump people are bullish on the tax cut. I talked to Larry Kudlow, I think is a good expert. And I think before we do anything drastic, we have to wait and see how much this grows the economy.
Manufacturing is one of the issues you mentioned earlier. It's certainly a big part of your campaign. Here in Wisconsin, we have Foxconn, who's received billions of dollars in incentive to come to the state. And Wisconsin has also considered incentivizing Kimberly-Clark to stay in the state. Are incentives a long-term solution to keeping manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin?
Well, as you know, I'm a congressman, and we vote on what is before us in Congress. So I know a lot of states wish they had Foxconn. We hope we're able to keep the Kimberly-Clark jobs here. But I think the overall thing is to have a strong workforce, a good tax climate, and a good regulatory climate. And I think that is why the 6th Congressional District has more manufacturing jobs than anywhere else in the country. On a national level, I believe manufacturing is probably, along with agriculture, the most important segment of the economy, because that creates wealth. You know, your wealth is not determined by the number of law firms you have or the number of big box stores you have. It determines what your manufacturing is. So I always believe that when you're talking about regulation or tax policy, that manufacturing and agriculture should come first.
And how do you boost manufacturing then? What specific policy could we have at the federal level that would help there?
We have to make sure that insofar as federal tax dollars flow into the state, and I have authored a bill that Donald Trump signed along this regard, that those dollars are able to be used for skills-based training. Whenever you go into a factory in my district, and I tour plenty of them, you always say our number one problem is we can't find more people to work. I also wish in the tax bill, they kind of treated everybody the same. I wish manufacturing was, like I said, treated a little better than big box stores. I think originally Donald Trump was there. I think Barack Obama was there. But it's not something we were able to get done.
And finally, we've got about 30 seconds left. What do you most want voters to know about you as they head to the polls?
Very accessible. Unlike my opponent, I do talk about issues like welfare. I do talk about we can't have sanctuary cities. We have local units of government, as far as I can see, encouraging illegal immigration. Hope you can vote for me on November 6th.
Glenn Grothman is a Republican U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District. Prior to his time in Congress, Representative Grothman served in the Wisconsin legislature from 1993 to 2015. He's running for a third term. Congressman Grothman, thank you for joining us this morning.
Well, always glad to talk to the erudite listeners of Wisconsin Public Radio.
All right, thanks. I'm John Munson. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.